and is set up, you should always make it automatic, because remember, that's why we're calling this the automatic millionaire. But if you do this yourself, you have to make sure, that's the key thing here, that that extra $200 goes towards the principal. Now, I've got news for you. Banks screw this up all the time. Whenever you send an extra principal payment, you have got to check your mortgage the next month. Because what they do all the time is they take that extra principal payment that you sent in manually and they stick it in a holding tank. They don't pay down your principal. They set it aside. They don't notify you of this. In fact, they put it in what's called an interest account. Interestingly enough, when they put your money in the interest account, they're not paying you interest. They're looking at it as an overpayment on your interest, and they're just sticking it aside. Now, I got to tell you something. This is the ultimate banking scam, and it goes on every single day. I watched a show about 10 years ago on 2020 or 60 Minutes. I forget which, but it talked about how banks screw up your principal payments on your mortgages. And I had bought a piece of real estate with one of my best friends who was a mortgage broker. And I said to him, Andrew, have you checked our mortgage lately? Because I just watched this show and we had been making extra payments on our principal. I said, have you checked? He's like, oh yeah, of course I checked. I said, no, really. Have you checked? Because I just saw this show about how they take your extra principal payments and they stick it off in a separate account and they don't credit you and we really should double check. Well, we went back and double checked. And you know what we found out? 9 months of extra principal payments that we had been making manually. It had been sitting in a little holding tank, not paying any of the principal down. Nobody had told us, just over there, just waiting for us to tell them what to do with the money. Now, here's the part of the story that blew my mind away. We had to prove to them that during those 9 months, we had made extra principal payments. Now, we had written it on the checks, we had attached a note, but we had to supply them with the canceled checks to prove that they had been cashed and that there were extra principal payments that had been added. They went out of their way to make the job difficult for us. Again, this is why it's not always that easy to just say, well, yeah, make an extra principal payment. The other thing you can do is at the end of the year, you can simply make one extra payment. If you make one extra payment a year on your mortgage, you'll accomplish exactly the same thing. You'll take a 30-year mortgage and you'll pay it off in 22 years. But let's be realistic. What happens at the end of the year? Again, you got the holidays, you got Christmas, you're spending a ton of money, you may be saving for retirement, you won't have that extra month of savings set aside, and it won't have been automated, so again, then you have to start budgeting, which we've already got rid of the budget, we threw that budget away. Going back to the bi-weekly mortgage plan, it's automated, it's simple, it's realistic, it's for savings. You should look at it. That's all I'm suggesting. Just go check it out, see what you think. All right, now the last question I get asked before we head into the action steps is this. You know what, David, I'm probably not going to live in this house for 30 years. In fact, I may only live in it for 5 years or 7 years or 10 years. Does it make sense to do a mortgage plan like this? My opinion is yes, and again, I'll tell you why. Making these extra payments towards your mortgage, which are all you're really doing is you're accelerating your savings. This is a forced process to accelerate your savings. You can always go back and get this equity out of your house. It's just one simple way to automate your way to greater wealth and forced savings. Okay, we're here at the end of the session. Good job. I want to go through the automatic millionaire action steps. Here's the first thing I would do. Whether you own a home or not, I would go get this free report from Fannie Mae. And hopefully by the time you get this program, they still have this free report. Right now, it is called Opening the Door to a Home of Your Own, Choosing a Mortgage, Knowing Your Credit, and Borrowing Basics. You'll find the details in the workbook. Give them a call. Order that. I had them send that to me. I think it's a great report. You should check that out. The second thing I would do is I would go to the website, which eLoan has. I'd go to eLoan.com. And I'd take a look at the mortgages. I'd see what can you afford based on your situation right now. Take a look at what you can afford. I'd also go to bankrate.com. They've got a great website, great calculators. You'll find the mortgage calculator for Bankrate on their website. You'll also find a mortgage calculator on my website. You can go to finishrich.com and check that out. If you've got a home right now and a 30-year mortgage, give PayMath a call. Again, it's www.paymap.com. Tell them how much your mortgage is. They'll run an illustration for you showing you exactly what doing a bi-weekly mortgage plan can do for you. The last thing, if you don't own a home, decide today, when are you going to buy your first home? We put in the workbook a little commitment sheet there for you. Write down, insert your name, we'll buy a home by, and put the date and sign it. Again, make the commitment to yourself to take action. You did a great job here today. I'm proud of you again. I look forward to the next session where we're going to tackle the issue of credit card debt. If you have credit card debt, you want to listen to this session. Even if you don't have credit card debt, you should still consider listening to this session because I'll go through all types of debt that could be car debt, etc. So check out the next session. Looking forward to coming back with you. Have a great day. Hi, well, welcome back. This is David. I'm here today with the Automatic Millionaire Program. We're going to talk about today the automatic debt-free lifestyle. Now, this is going to be a unique session because for some of you, as you listen to this program, I know you're in credit card debt. How do I know that? Well, the average American family right now has reportedly over $8,400 in credit card debt. This is really an amazing statistic. It just came out of USA Today. Right now, college students who are graduating senior year have 6 credit cards with nearly $4,000 in credit card debt. You know, people go, I can't believe that. I recently did a speech at Santa Clara College. 4 college students. The average person in the room was a sophomore. They already had 3 credit cards. So again, I know that a lot of you who are listening to this program, you have credit card debt. This is a problem. We will tackle it in this session. And it's really important to say something right now. I know that if you have credit card debt, you may have to reevaluate the sessions before. Like, how much money should you pay yourself first if you've got credit card debt? Let me address that issue up front, all right? Whatever amount of money you decide that you're going to save to pay yourself first, here's what I suggest. If you have credit card debt, whatever that percentage is, let's go back to the 10% number because it's easy to work with. If I've convinced you to pay yourself first 10% of your income, half of it, 5% specifically, should go into your retirement account for the future. I call that pay for the future. The other half, 5%, should go into pay for your past. That's your debt. Again, let me do one more example. Let's use dollar amounts. Let's say you're saving $200 a month. $100 would go into your 401k plan or your IRA account. $100 would go to pay down your debt. Now, earlier we talked about your security account. What do you do about that? If you've got debt, we want you to build your security account, remember, up to 1 month of expenses, then pay down the debt as fast as possible. Okay? So, again, credit card debt, half of whatever you've agreed to pay yourself first is going to go to the future. Half's going to go to pay down the debt. Once the debt is then paid down, you'll go back towards working to the goal to build your emergency basket. All right? Hope that made some sense to you. So now one question in your brain might be this. Well, wait a minute. I've got credit card debt, David, that's costing 18% interest. I know I can't make that kind of rate of return in my 401k plan. Why would I put money in the 401k plan before I pay down my debt? A couple reasons. The biggest mistake I see with people who give financial advice is they tell you, take all of your money, all of your energy, and just go to get out of debt. Here's the problem with that. Realistically, if you have a lot of credit card debt, it is going to take you possibly well over a year to get out of credit card debt. It could take you 2 or 3 years to get out of credit card debt. If all you're doing is taking your hard-earned dollars and trying to get out of that debt hole, you will be depressed. I mean, you just gotta tell the truth. It is a negative thing to pay off credit card debt. It is negative energy, it is depressing, and you will not see a lot of progress. On the other hand, if half of your money is going towards debt, you're shrinking your debt pile, and half of your money is going into a retirement account, you're seeing part of your financial situation improve. That improvement keeps you motivated. Now, I'm not talking about this from theory. I learned this from working with clients one-on-one. When I had my clients put all their energy into paying down debt, what I saw firsthand is that as the months went by, they started losing interest. So when I switched to this idea that 50% goes to pay for the future, 50% goes to pay for the past, they stayed on track. Now back to the 18%. I agree. If you've got an 18% credit card, that's not a good rate. But the key thing here is we can do something about it. In this session, I'm going to teach you how to get those rates renegotiated. So you'll learn how to deal with that issue as we continue on. So now let's talk about something. How did you get into credit card debt? See, everybody goes to attack the problem. Well, here you're in credit card debt, let's get you out. But first of all, let's take a look at how it happened. And I'll start by looking at me. How did I get myself into credit card debt back in college? Remember I talked about how I was $12,000 in credit card debt by the time I was a junior? How in the world did that happen? Well, the way it happened to me may be very similar to how it happened to you. It snuck up on me. I went to college down in Southern California. And when I went to the dorm the first day of college, I got my student ID. And after I got my student ID, right next to the little table where they gave you your student ID was another table. And on that table, they had a bunch of gifts. They had a bike lock. Oh, I had a bike. I could use a bike lock. They had a clock radio. Well, geez, I'm about to go into my dorm. I could use a clock radio. And they had a dictionary. Now, what all-American college kid wouldn't like a bike lock, a clock radio, and a dictionary? And they said, all you got to do is give us your student ID and sign right here. So I did that. Well, guess what they gave me? 3 credit cards. So I go upstairs to my dorm floor. I got my clock radio, my dictionary, my bike lock. I'm all excited. Everybody's like, hey, where'd you get all the free stuff? Oh, they're giving it away downstairs. A week later, the credit cards show up. You know, whatever I had. I think it was Visa, MasterCard, American Express. They all show up, and it's party time, right? Because guess what? I'm not the only kid who's 18 at college now on my dorm floor that got all those goodies. We all got the credit card. So I want you to imagine this now. And I don't know, maybe this has happened to you, maybe not. Here we are, 18 years old, right? We think we're smart, but we're not. We've all got credit cards. What do you think the first thing is we did with these credit cards? Remember, I got the credit cards for emergency purposes only. I was only going to use them in case of emergency. Immediately, we found an emergency. We had to go to the local bar. It was called Traditions. And I'll never forget this. We went out and we had a great time. And then we, of course, took those credit cards. What do? We played a game called Credit Card Roulette. And we pulled the credit card out of a hat, and that person got stuck with the bills. Well, look, obviously, not a good habit to get into. As time went on, freshman year, I've run up my debt now. The credit cards, which only started with $500, which I didn't think I could get myself into too much trouble in, guess what happens? As soon as I filled up the credit cards, you know what they did? They sent me an additional extension. They said, congratulations, David, you've done such a great job. We've increased your limit to $1,000. Remember, only for emergency. Next thing you know, I've used $1,000. Now what starts happening? I'm on every single mailing list in the world. These credit card applications are showing up at the dorms, just like they're probably showing up at your house. And before you know it, I've got more than 3 credit cards. I end up having like 5 or 6, just like the national averages they talk about. Now remember, only in case of emergency. Am I using these credit cards for emergencies? No. Now I'm going on vacations that I can't afford with my friends for spring break. Now I'm buying clothes I don't necessarily need to compete with my other friends so I can look just as good as they look. Now I'm out buying new bikes. Now I'm out going out to fancier dinners. I'm in college living beyond my means. Now, am I the only college student that did this? No. Have you possibly gone through this? Yes, right? It's a trap. Okay, so I don't know if your situation was similar to mine. I don't know how your credit card debt snuck up on you. What I do know is this. Credit card debt holds us down. I made it a goal to get out of that credit card debt. I'll never forget, as those credit cards started showing up at school for me. Now, here I am, I'm a junior, and then I'm a senior. You know, this is not where I wanted to be living my life. I remember actually being almost dizzy as I would open up these bills. I remember all the effort that I had to go to get out of these credit card debts, to pay them off, working extra hard just to get out of credit card debt. And I also remember trying to be disciplined, telling myself, you know what, I'm going to go out to the stores, but I'm not going to use my credit cards. Well, that approach didn't work. I remember pulling my credit cards and leaving them at home. Well, that approach always didn't work because sometimes I'd go back and get them. You know, the only thing that ultimately worked for me? Stop carrying credit cards. Today, I carry an American Express card because it requires me to pay it off every single month, and I carry a debit card. I have not been in credit card debt since the age of 23. So, you know, I have since that nightmare of an experience, I got myself out of debt. I found out the only thing that works long term for me is to not carry credit cards and to pay my bills monthly. But I want to go through with you now a specific plan that you can use to attack your debt. Are you ready? Good, then let's go. All right, this is what I call Operation No More Debt. Let's go to step one. Step one, you have to stop digging. I can't stress it enough. Go back to me for a second. You know, here I am in debt. I just kept getting it worse. You have to stop digging. If you've got credit card debt, you need to take those credit cards, and honestly, you need to cut them up. You need to bury them in your backyard. You know, I don't care if you got to put them in a bowl of water in your freezer. I've had people tell me they did this. They took their credit card, stuck them in a bowl of water, and froze it. That way, they're forced to literally thaw the credit cards out before they can use them. Whatever works for you, you got to make it easy for yourself to not use them. Now, it's an interesting thing about credit card debt. People are sometimes proud of this. I used to do seminars, and I'd say, how many of you have a credit card debt problem? And I'd have people come up to me and they go, oh, I'm in credit card debt. David, I've got $20,000 of credit cards. Really? You got $20,000 in credit card debt? Yeah. Let me see your purse. How many credit cards do you have? Oh, they take them out. Here, 9 credit cards. And they're laughing. I used to have a scissor at my seminars where I would actually cut up their credit cards. But I did that a couple times to people who volunteered. I actually had one woman almost in tears. I realized, okay, I'll stop doing this in seminars. But the point, the idea is this. If you were an alcoholic, you had a drinking problem, and you walked up to somebody with a bottle of vodka and you said, you know what, I'm an alcoholic, and you're carrying a bottle of vodka, what would they do? They'd take the bottle of vodka out of your hand and they'd throw it in the garbage, right? Well, with credit cards, it's the same thing. If you know you've got a credit card problem, then why are you still carrying them? You got to stop digging, okay? Now, that was all psychological. Let's go to action-oriented things. All right, step two. Step two is a really important step, renegotiating the interest rate on your debt. I have to tell you that this one idea for the entire audio program, if you just do this one idea, it pays for this audio program potentially in the first month, maybe in the first week. The idea I'm going to give you is so simple. You may have heard of it, you may have not heard of it. I recently did this on a radio show, but I'll share that story in a second. Here's what you want to do, okay? Very simply, you want to pull your credit cards out of your wallet. I want you to line them all up, and I want you to figure out what interest rate are you paying on each and every credit card, all right? So if you've got a MasterCard in your wallet, I want you to find out what is the interest rate. I don't want you to guess. I want you to pick up the phone, and I want you to call MasterCard, find out the interest rate. If you've got a Visa card, call them. Ask them, what is the interest rate you're charging me? I want to know the effective rate. Make sure they're quoting you the real rate. A lot of times they quote you the rate over prime. If prime's at 4% and they quote you 6% over prime, you're actually at 10%. You need to know the effective rate. Now, here's what you're going to find out. On average, you are probably paying over 17% right now on your credit card debt. Now, I don't know when you're listening to this, so it could be different. But the key thing is that what you're paying is probably twice as much as you should be paying. So let's use today for an example. Right now, when I do television shows or radio shows or live money makeovers, my experience has been this. The average person I meet with who has credit card debt is being charged between 17 to 22% interest right now for the credit card debt. Now, that is a huge ripoff. And here's what you can do in a matter of minutes to get your interest rate lowered. Once you know what the rate is, I want you to go to the following website. Go to www.bankrate.com. Click into the area that shows credit cards. You'll see what the going offers are right now on new credit cards. Then go to another website, lowermybills.com. Now, you can go to my website, finishrich.com. Both these websites are linked from my website. Again, why do I want you to go to these websites? Because I want you to see what the going rate is right now for new credit cards. Or just open your mail this week because you're going to be getting offers in the mail. Right now, as I talk to you this moment, the rate on new credit cards that are being issued is 0% interest, or anywhere from 0% interest to 6%. So again, that's a great rate, and many of these credit card companies are offering this right now for 6 months to a year. So if you've got a rate, let's say, of 17%, when you could be getting a 0% interest rate, that's a bad deal. So here's what you do. You call your credit card company up and you tell them, look, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, whoever you're talking to, you say, I want to speak to a supervisor. They'll say, why? Ma'am, listen to me. I want to speak to a supervisor. Don't try and negotiate your credit card interest rate with the first person you call. So you'll call your credit card company. Again, back to Visa. You'll call Visa. Somebody's going to answer the phone. They're going to ask for your credit card number. You're going to say, I want to speak to a supervisor. A supervisor will get on the phone and you will say to them this. You are charging me 17% interest rate. Your competitor today mailed me an application. Look at the competitor who's offering it. You know, you went and you did the research. Give them the name. Say, whoever it is, MasterCard, has offered me a credit card at no percent interest. In order for me to continue to work with you, Visa, you need to lower my interest rate right now while I'm on the phone. I want you to lower my rate to below 6%. Now, you don't have to throw out there what you want them to lower to. You may let them offer you something. Will they really lower my interest rate just by asking? The answer is unequivocally yes. Because number one, they know that you can move your credit card debt to somebody else. And they don't want to lose you. It's extremely expensive to acquire a customer. It costs them, in many cases, well over $100 per customer to get you. That's why the credit card companies send over 1 billion, that's billion with a B, pieces of mail a year soliciting you to become a credit card holder. So they don't want to lose you. And if you've been paying your bills on time, I promise you on the phone, if you talk to a supervisor, you got a really good chance of getting your interest rate lowered. And hey, guess what? They won't lower your interest rate. You've already done the research. You can move your credit card debt to another company that will give you the lower rate. Now, I was recently doing a radio show with Ron Owens in San Francisco. He's probably the biggest radio host on the whole West Coast. I was telling him, just like I'm telling you right now, here's what you can do to lower your interest rates. And he said to me at the break, he's like, is it really that easy? Are you just saying that for radio? I go, it's really that easy. Literally 10 minutes later, we get a live phone call, you know, because he takes call-ins. We get this live call-in. The guy says, David, I pulled off the side of the freeway with my cell phone. I've been listening to you. I've been listening to you and Ron talk about this. I pulled off the side of the freeway. I called my credit card company, and in 5 minutes on the side of the freeway, he was right near the Caldecott Tunnel, they lowered my interest rate from 7% to 5%, just like you said. Now, I may be motivating you so much that you want to pull off the side of the road right now and do this. I don't think that that's a good idea. It's not always safe. Do this when you get to work. Do this when you get home tonight. But it truly is that easy. And this is very important because no matter how much credit card debt you have, the lower the interest rate, the easier it is for you to pay off your credit card debt. And that's what we want. We want to make it easier for you to pay off your debt so that your debt stops snowballing, if you will. There's this phrase where it's like a snowball, just keeps getting bigger and bigger. It's the interest rate that causes that to get bigger and bigger. If you've got $10,000 in debt and it's growing at 20% a year, no matter how much money you spend to pay it down, you're always fighting that battle. It's always getting bigger instead of getting smaller. One of the questions you may have is right now, if the company I'm trying to renegotiate with won't lower my interest rate, if Visa says, nope, sorry, we won't do it, and I really have this application at home that's 0% interest, is there any reason for me not to just move my credit card debt? Maybe, it depends. I'll give you an example. Let's say that the application that says 0% interest also tells you that at the end of 6 months, if you haven't paid off your debt, they're going to hit you with interest payments for those 6 months after those 6 months are over. Did you just follow that? Probably not. It's confusing. Let me say that again. Let's say that you're 0% interest for 6 months. At the end of 6 months, some of these credit cards say things like, if you haven't paid it all off, we will go back and charge you the interest rate for the first 6 months. So again, that's a scam. You got to really read the fine print before you transfer your debt. Okay, so now that we've looked at how to renegotiate your interest rate, let me give you another secret. When you're renegotiating your interest rate, you can also get the credit card company to consolidate your debt. I'll give you an example. Let's say you have $2,000 on Visa, you have $1,000 on MasterCard, and you have $500 on some other credit card company. Well, you're talking to Visa, and you say, you know what, you're charging me 17% interest. I'll move over all my credit card debt to you. I've got $3,000 in additional credit card debt with all these other credit card companies. I'll move it all over to you if you'll give me a rate for 6 months of 6%. They love that because now they're picking up additional debt. They'll be more than willing to lower your interest rate. They'll be more than willing to lock it in for a period of time. Again, so much of this is just learning how to ask. This is the kind of stuff that should have been taught to you in school, but again, nobody's teaching this stuff, right? So it's learning how to ask these questions. So it's a great thing to consider consolidating your debt, and I'll tell you why. If your debt is consolidated, it's easier to pay it off, right? I mean, first of all, you're only getting one bill, so that's helpful. Second of all, you can often get the rate lowered by consolidating all your debt. And the third thing, it's the power of focus. You know, one bill, one rate, that's the enemy. That's what you attack versus having five different credit cards and trying to juggle them all the time and worry about them. You've also got less of a chance of getting hit with late fees because if you're doing everything automatically the way I suggest, you can actually set up your bank or your online bill payment company to pay your credit cards on a specific day and you're only having to pay one credit card, fewer things will fall through the cracks. So now we're on step three. I call this paying down your debt systematically. I've got a nice little phrase. I call it DOLP. D-O-L-P. DOLP stands for Dead on Last Payment. Now, this is a very simple idea that if you're not going to consolidate your debt, you've got to have an attack plan for which credit cards you pay off and in which order you pay them off. Now, in your workbook, you'll actually find a little section on DOLP that I suggest you go back and look at. There's a worksheet to help you fill out, basically take your credit cards, line up how much debt you've got, line up the interest rate, do a quick calculation. By using the DOLP chart, you can then determine which credit cards to pay off in which order. Pull out the workbook, take a look at the DOLP category because it will help you focus on which credit cards to pay and in what order to pay them off. And now for step four, we're going to take a look at finding out your FICO score. This is critical, all right? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go online to a company called myfico.com. That's www.myfico.com. MyFICO.com is run by a company called Fair Isaac. Now, Fair Isaac's an amazing company. What Fair Isaac has been doing for years is keeping track of our credit records. They take the three major credit card companies, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion Corporation. They pull your records. They look at your debt. They see how fast you pay your debt off or if you pay your debt late. They take a look at your overall debt structure versus your income. They got all kinds of systems in place to score your credit record. When you go to buy a home or get a home loan or even apply often for a credit card, what they do, these companies, is they go and look at your FICO score. And FICO has a score based on you. It is like your financial GPA. Now, the question I have for you right now is, do you know what your financial GPA is? Chances are you don't. This score has always been private. The only way you could ever get these scores is if you could get your mortgage banker to give you your score. In other words, for a long time, the only people who could get access to these scores were the banks. Now this information is public. Of course, they charge you for it. So you've got to go to myfico.com and buy it. When you go to myfico.com, you can get your report run right now. It's about $12.95. If you want a more thorough report, they have different levels that you can go into. But for $12.95 online, you can get your report instantly in minutes. Now, this is a very important thing to see because not only does it give you your score, but because it consolidates all of your information, you're able in a matter of minutes with one little report to see everything you've ever done financially. It's a little bit scary. It's like getting your financial transcripts. They'll have every credit card account you've ever opened. They'll have every single time you've ever made a late payment. Everything that needs to be known about you will be on this report. And the report tells you why your score is what it is. And it tells you what you can do conceivably to get your score up. FICO scores range from 300, that's really bad credit, to 850, which is basically the perfect borrower. about 720 is average, which to say is if you've got a score of 720, you've got a really solid FICO score. When you go to their website, they'll show you where the scores are, what an average score is, what a bad score is. And I'll tell you, this is so simple to do. A true story, I was by the pool with my wife. We were in Hawaii on vacation, and we got into an argument because I asked her if she had paid a certain bill before we left. And she said, no, I brought the bills with me. I said, well, have you mailed the bills? Because bringing them with us to Hawaii, if we don't mail them, doesn't help us. And I was like, you know, we're in the process of getting a new mortgage. We can't afford to have any late fees. And at that very moment in time, I was writing this book called The Finish Rich Workbook. And I was writing a whole section about myfico.com. And my wife looked at me and she said, well, let's just go online right now and find out what our credit scores look like. And I'll prove to you that my credit score is just fine. And so sitting by the pool with our laptop, we literally went to MyFICO, ran our credit scores, and God bless my wife. You know what? Her credit score was just fine. Michelle's credit score was only like 2 points below me, and I had to buy her a drink by the pool. But we did it all by the pool. We actually refinanced our home by the pool, too. You know, today with technology and the internet, this stuff is so easy. You literally can do this from anywhere. So you do want to go do that. I can't recommend it strongly enough. Again, go back to myfico.com, check it out. No one here is paying me to recommend this. It's just the one place you want to go to get this done. Step five. Stop all those credit card applications from filling up your mailbox. If you are sick and tired of getting new credit card applications, here's what you can do. There's a website called www.stopjunk.com. You can also call the National Opt-Out Center, which is 1-888-567-8688. Once again, that's 1-888-567-8688. Now, again, if you're in your car, don't worry about it. We put this in the workbook again, too. But the fastest way to get yourself off of these mailing lists is to ask to be taken off the mailing list. Another thing, when you get a call at home, if it's from a credit card company and you don't want them calling you, you just tell them, take me off your call list. Put me on the do not call list. Legally, they have to stop calling you. Step six, let me just quickly talk to you about debt counseling. How do you know when you need debt counseling? It's a question I get all the time. The answer is this. Often, if you think you need debt counseling, you need debt counseling. If you're having a hard time making the minimum payments on your credit cards, now, 0% interest rates, this better not be hard for you. But if you're having a hard time making the minimum payments on your credit cards, you've got a problem. You can go to the Consumer Credit Counseling Services. They are the largest organization in the country. They're the most well-known. Their website and their phone number is in the workbook. Again, it's Consumer Credit Counseling Services. One more organization you can go to if you got a lot of credit card debt is MyVista, MYVSTA. Great organization. Works with people who have a whole lot of credit card debt. All right? Two organizations for you right there. Okay, we're at the last step of this session, and that is make it automatic, right? We're at the Automatic Millionaire Program. We want to make paying off your debt automatic. The way the credit card companies get you is they ding you for late payments. This is the ultimate scam. If your credit card is due on the 25th of August and your bill shows up on the 25th of August, often they don't credit it until the next day, and they'll hit you with $30 in late fees, and they'll hit you with extra interest rate fees. It's all one big giant scam. You want to make sure you're paying your credit card companies early. Don't go the last day. Best thing to do, figure out what day your credit cards are due. If they're due on the 15th, set your bank up or your online bill pay company to automatically pay your credit cards at least 5 days, in my opinion, before the credit is due. That way you know you won't get hit with these late fees. By the way, if you get hit with late fees, again, it comes down to negotiations. Pick up the phone, call your credit card company, tell them you're furious that you always pay your credit cards on time, you can't believe they penalized you with this late fee, that you want the late fee credited back. If they won't credit them back, you're going to move your credit card debt. You will find that they will credit you back in almost all cases. In fact, I've been able to go back and get up to 6 months of fees credited back that I found out about before. So you just have to ask. All right, so let's cover cars here. Very important, those cars. What should you do? Let's go through them real quickly. If you are out of debt, should you pay cash for your cars? It really depends. I would say no, you shouldn't pay cash for your cars. Why should you not pay cash for your cars? Because cars are the worst investment you could ever buy. If you buy a brand new car and you drive it off the lot, the moment you drive it off the lot, it's gone down in value at least 30%. Did you catch that? Let's say you buy a $30,000 car. You drive it off the lot, you turn around the corner, you bring it back, they're going to give you 20 grand for that car. That is not a good investment. So when you go to buy a car, I'm all for using other people's money. If you can get somebody else to give you money to buy that car, like right now, the car companies are dying to sell cars. If you can get somebody to give you money to buy your car, give you the actual loan to buy the car with a low interest rate, I would go that route. The smartest thing you can do, however, if you're going to buy a car, is to buy a car that's at least 2 years old. And I'll tell you why. There was a huge movement in America to lease cars in the 90s. A lot of those cars were on two-year leases. So what happens is these cars come back to the dealership. They're almost brand new. They don't even have a lot of miles on them. But you can buy that car for half the price of buying a new car. That's a really smart thing to do. The other question I get a lot on radio shows is, David, what about leasing a car versus purchasing a car? You know, a lot of people will tell you, oh, no question, you should always purchase, not lease. There is no such thing as you should always do something, and here's why. If you're in business and you can write off your lease, if you drive less than 10,000 miles a year, you need to talk to your CPA about this. But in many cases, you can write off almost 100% of your lease if the car is truly for business usage. So provided you're not putting a lot of miles on your car, you can get a great deal on a lease, drive a brand new car every few years, and really not pay for it because you're getting to write it off. Who doesn't a lease work for? A lease does not work if you're putting a lot of miles on your car because most leases, once you've driven the car more than 10,000 miles, they start hitting you with penalty fees upwards of 5 cents a mile. So if you're driving a lot of miles, there's no way a lease is going to work. Then you need to buy the car. And when you buy the car again, I would look at buying a car that's at least 2 years old. Now people go, yeah, but it doesn't smell brand new. They've got this special spray now. You can get it at a car wash place. And you spray it in your car, it smells just like new. Spray some Armor All on the tires and some Armor All on the seats and the dashboard and nobody will know the difference. All right, so there you go. We've covered a lot of material in this session. Again, I want to say good job and I want to congratulate you. I'm proud of you for sticking through it. I know we've covered some incredibly powerful ideas that when you go use them will have an immediate impact on your life. Let's give you the automatic millionaire action steps, the things you want to go do right now. Okay, here we go. Later when you get home, when you've got time, I want you to look in the workbook and take a look at those websites. Go to myfico.com. Make an appointment with yourself to go to myfico.com and run your credit report. The next thing I want you to do, call your credit card companies, renegotiate your interest rate. And the last thing, if you've got a lot of credit cards, what I want you to do is this, cut them up. Okay, one last thing. As a bonus to you, my gift to you, go to my website, finishrich.com. You'll find an entire chapter based on credit card debt that you can download for free. It comes from my workbook called The Finish Rich Workbook, which was a national bestseller. But there's a whole chapter that I put online. You can actually download it for free. My gift to you. Enjoy. Until I speak with you again, have a great day. We're coming back for the last session, which is session number 8. Can't wait to be back with you again soon. Have a great day. Well, welcome back. Okay, can you tell I'm a little excited? This is David Bach. I hope you're excited. You know what? This is our last session together. And I just, you know, I've been saying congratulations each day that you've shown up to listen to the next session. But I really want to say to you today, congratulations. The fact that you went all the way through this program, that you didn't get bogged down in the details, that you took all the action that you've taken, it's very possible that your entire life already has been changing financially. So, well done. By now, I am sure you've made some big changes in your life financially. You're probably starting to see some serious results. And you know what? I just have to tell you something. This has really been some special time together. I really appreciate you letting me into your life, you giving me the time and the trust and the commitment to use these tools in the Automatic Millionaire. And again, I told you in the first session I wanted to hear from you. So let me just say that again. I want to hear how this program has impacted you. You go to my website, www.finishrich.com. You can contact me at that website. You can also email me. Here is my special email for people from Nightingale Conant. You can email me at success@finishrich.com. Again, that's success@finishrich.com. Put in the subject line, Nightingale Conant, the Automatic Millionaire. I'll know it's coming from you. I want to hear how this program has impacted you. I also want to know if you've got other suggestions, because I have to tell you, the only reason the Automatic Millionaire program even exists today, the one you're listening to, is because the readers of Smart Women Finish Rich and Smart Couples Finish Rich came back to me over and over and over again to the point where I had thousands of requests for a simple program. They kept saying, David, teach me how to make it simple. Teach me the secret to getting rich. That's what inspired me to create this program. So now, as we're in the last session together, I want to read you a quote. Here's the quote. It comes from Winston Churchill. We make a living by what we earn. We make a life by what we give. So as we come to our last session together, I think that's a really perfect quote to start with, because the idea behind this session is this. Make a difference with automatic tithing. That's the name of this session. Now, you might think, wow, why is he ending this program with the idea of tithing? Well, first of all, and what is tithing? You know, if you're a religious person, you absolutely know what tithing is, because they hit you over the head with this stuff when you're in church or the synagogue. But the key behind tithing, it's a very, very, very old tradition, is this idea that a piece of what you sow, you give back. In other words, as your income comes in, you give some of your income back to the world to help it. That can be your church, your temple, your community. You're helping people in need. Now, there's an interesting thing about this concept. As I've studied over the years, people who are really wealthy, I mean, I'm not talking millionaires. I'm talking people who are worth $100 million or more. A lot of people who are billionaires. When you try and find what is the common denominator behind billionaires, now, again, this program is called the Automatic Millionaire. I'm not calling it the Automatic Billionaire, because that would seem too big. But what is the common denominator among billionaires? Here's what you find. Most people who became billionaires, that's billion with a B, started tithing at a very young age before they became rich. So before they became rich, before they had financial abundance in their life, there is so much written, documented proof that these people gave money at a very young age. I'll give you an example. John Templeton. You may or may not know John Templeton, but John Templeton is regarded as one of the greatest investors of all time. He ran the Templeton Funds. And John Templeton is a billionaire. This is the story. I haven't heard this from John Templeton himself, but the story that is reported is that when John Templeton was earning as little as $50 a month, he was giving half of his earnings to charity. So even when he was living barely above poverty level, I mean, John Templeton didn't start off a billionaire. He started off from scratch. When he was just getting started and he was married, he was still giving half of his paycheck to charity. John Templeton is an amazing man. He's obviously done a lot of good in the world. And I'm not suggesting to you, you need to go pay 50% of what you make to charity, because that is extreme. I'm not even going to tell you what percentage you should pay to charity. I think that's for you to decide. The message in this session is this. The idea of tithing is the idea of abundance. The key to abundance, however, is the way you create it. Now, what most people do with tithing, and I've been guilty of this myself, is that they get to the end of the year and they look at what they've got left over. And then they give. They give because of tax deductions. They give because it's the holidays and there's guilt. They give because somebody asked. But they give after the fact. In other words, just like most people save, they get to the end of the year, they see what's left over, and they give to charity. A better way to give, in my opinion, is make it automatic. You decide what percentage of your income you want to give. It could be 1% of your income. But you choose a charity, you choose an organization, and you make the process of giving money to that organization automated. When it's all said and done, even though this program is called the Automatic Millionaire, there's a lot more to life than money. I think money helps, no question. You know, people go, do you need money to be happy? Well, I don't know. I think it's easier to be happy when you have money. I can tell you one thing, without money, you can certainly be miserable. But the bottom line is this, your approach to becoming an automatic millionaire, you've already got it set up. It's going to work for you. You can get rich without helping other people. There's no question. It's just a mathematical formula. You can pay yourself first automatically and you can get rich and you can never help a soul. But how are you going to feel inside? See, I would tell you there are a lot of people who are rich, but they don't feel rich inside. And what good is that? What good is it to have money and feel cheap inside? Not feel like you're coming from a place of abundance. In fact, what happens to some people because they spend their whole life watching where every single penny goes, they spend their whole life scrimping to get rich. They're so not in a mode of giving that when they become wealthy, they really aren't, they don't even feel abundant. You know, what fun is that? What fun is it to be rich and then have no abundance in your life? So I think one thing you can do before you're rich is create a feeling of abundance. And the way you create that feeling is you start giving a piece of your income to help other people. Now, again, you know, I've always believed you got to walk your talk. And I will tell you, when I went out and wrote the book, The Automatic Millionaire, this really helped me focus on walking my talk more when it comes to tithing, because I really do believe in what I'm telling you. But I will tell you honestly that tithing for me has been something that I've always done backwards. Just like I've focused on paying myself first for the last 15 years of my life, I focused on paying myself first. I did not automate my tithing. So guess what? That is now changing. We are now giving a percentage of my company's gross income to charity, so that when the money comes in, we have set it up to automatically give a percentage of that income right out the door. The moment the check comes in, just like we pay ourselves first, we're now paying money right out the door back out to charity. Now, again, it doesn't matter what the percentage is that I'm using. You could use 1%, 2%, 3%. A lot of churches may recommend 10%. And let me just say something about that. I do see people who are giving 10% to their church and saving nothing, or 10% of their temple and saving nothing. That's a challenge, because then you're giving everything away and you have no financial security. There's a reason I put tithing at the end of this program. The importance of tithing is the spiritual abundance it's going to provide you. But I do want you to have financial security. I do believe that when you have financial security, you'll learn how to become more abundant, because you'll have more freedom. You'll have more time. When you have more time, one of the things you learn how to do is focus on things besides yourself. Now, I'm sure you're already focusing on things besides yourself. Financial freedom gives you even more time to do that. And when you think about tithing, what it does is it puts you in a proactive place every month, every time you get paid, to think to yourself, who do I want to help now? Now, as I talk about tithing, one of the things I know is that, you know what, truthfully, you probably already are giving money to charity. How do I know that? Because Americans were very generous. We're a very generous people. The statistics in 2001, the last time they had recorded data, was this. Americans gave over $200 billion to charitable organizations. We are the most giving people in the world. In America in 2001, approximately 93 million adults did some type of volunteer work, volunteering on average 4 hours of his or her time per week. And that is just astounding. I don't know where these people are finding all that time, but it's certainly impressive. Certainly after 9/11, we saw just enormous amounts of people come out of the woodwork, giving money to charity, giving time to charity, reconnecting with their community. So the good news is, as Americans, we're very giving. What I want to go through right now with you specifically is, how could you create a tithing program that's automatic? And that's what we're going to do right now. So here we go. Step one, commit to tithe. I think the best way to commit to tithe is just like you did everything else. Decide to make it automatic. So just like you decided to pay yourself first and you chose a percentage or a dollar amount, just like you decided to do your security basket and you chose a dollar amount and you automated it, you want to do the same thing with charity. Now, whatever the dollar amount is, let's just use $100. Let's say you want to give $100 a month out of your paycheck to charity. In your workbook is a little tithing commitment sheet. You can fill it out. It basically walks you through putting down your name, putting down the date, deciding what percentage of your income you want to tithe, and signing it. Okay, that's going to be one of your action steps later, but I'm just telling you that it's there. Step number two, again, I want you to make it automatic. So step number one, you're going to commit to tithing. Step number two, I want you to make it automatic. Now, of course, charities are smart. Just like the government and just like Fortune 500 companies, charities have figured out the best way to get people to give money regularly is to make it automatic. So most charities today will be more than happy to take your credit card number or take your checking account number, automatically take the money out of your checking account or automatically take the money off of your credit card. They'll automate the process for you. They love to do this. That is, in my opinion, the best way to do it. I wouldn't put it on your credit card. I'd automatically have your checking account direct the money to the organization, or see if payroll deduction will do it, or use your online bill pay again to make it so that the money is going automatically from your bank account to your charity. Ideally, do it the same day you get paid. Okay, now the next step, step three, make sure before you give the money to the charity that you do some research. There are so many charities today that you just want to make sure that if you're going to give your hard-earned dollars to charity, you want to make sure that your money is going to the cause you believe in. A good rule of thumb is that you'd like to see the charity that you're giving your donation to provide 65% or more of your donation to the actual cause. This is really important because there are a lot of charities that call you up and solicit your donations, and 90 cents on the dollar is going to administration costs and only 10 cents is actually going to the charity, and that's a disappointment. So how do you make sure that you're using a charity that's legitimate? Again, in your workbook, I've given you some websites you can go to research charities. I'll give you a couple right now. One of the websites you'll find there is give.org. It's www.give.org. They're run by the Better Business Alliance. Check them out. Go to www.guidestar.org. Again, in the workbook, you'll find a list of websites to help you do your research. The question to always ask a charity before you give money to them: what percentage of the money is going to the organization that they're asking you to solicit funds for, and will they give you written documentation to prove they did that the year before? If they won't, don't work with that organization. Find a charity that will. Step number four, it's really important that when you give money to charity that you keep track of who you're giving it to, because you can get a deduction on your taxes when you give money to charity. Now, the IRS has all the information you need to know about giving money to charity on their website. If you go to their website, there's a report, which right now is report number 526, called Charitable Contributions. You can actually download that from the IRS website, which is irs.gov. Again, don't worry, I put this information in the workbook for you. All right, so make sure you keep track of your charitable contributions. If you give a donation less than $250, the IRS requires you to keep the written documentation. In case you get audited, you're going to need to prove who you gave the money to and what you gave the money for. You'll need something like a canceled check, or you'll need your credit card statements to prove that you did this. If it's more than $250, the IRS right now requires you to provide written proof and documentations with your tax returns. Also, you should be aware that not all charitable donations are 100% deductible. As an example, say you spend $500 on tickets going to a show or a charity event. You won't be able to deduct all of that cost, and usually the organization will tell you exactly, if you spend $500 on an event ticket, what percentage is actually deductible. Step number five, I want you to find out about donor-advised mutual funds. Here's what these funds are. They're really cool. In the workbook, there's three companies. I'll tell you who they are: Fidelity, Charles Schwab, and T. Rowe Price. I put those in the workbook. Three established donor funds that are worth considering. Now, it's important to say, as I do this recording, it does require $10,000 to invest in these mutual funds. Here's how it works. You'll find the companies, the websites, and the phone numbers in the workbook. But in essence, a charitable donor-advised mutual fund allows you to put your money inside this mutual fund, get an instant taxable donation. You'll actually be able to write this off on your taxes. The money is diversified. It's managed professionally. And then later, when you're ready to put the money in the charity, you contact the mutual fund company and they move the money from the mutual fund to the charitable organization. Now, what's nice about that is that let's say you are doing well financially and you decide that you want to put away $10,000 in the mutual fund. You get an instant tax deduction, and now you can let that mutual fund be managed and grow. And maybe 5 years from now, that $10,000 will grow to $20,000. Then you can decide who you want to give the money to from a charity standpoint, and you can have them actually issue out a check to the charity organizations. Again, three companies I listed, Fidelity, Schwab, and T. Rowe Price. You'll find information on those funds in the workbook. Before I head into the action steps, the automatic millionaire action steps of your last session here, I just want to say this. Again, tithing's one of those things that you can go, you know, I've heard about it, and all these things make sense. David, I trust you. I intellectually understand it, but you can also blow it off. And I just want to say one more time to you. Even if you only gave 1% of your income, the good that you would do in the world is huge. The good that you would do for yourself is enormous. Because even if you just gave 1% of your income to charity, to community, what would happen is you would start to feel richer inside. There's a feeling of abundance that comes from giving a piece of who you are on a consistent basis to others. And the more you do that, the more you grow. And I gotta tell you something. Yeah, the Automatic Millionaire, this is a program that probably hooked you because of the title and because of the money. But I know for a fact that you wouldn't be here on this session, this committed, if it wasn't about more than money for you. You're somebody who's committed to personal development, personal growth, constant learning, constant improvement. You are one of the few. And you can be a leader, not just in your home, not just in your office, but in your community. And one of the ways you start to lead is through tithing. And as I head into these action steps, again, I'm going to go through a list of things you can do. Seriously consider that. Consider being a leader. Here's what you can do right now to lead. Number one, automatic millionaire action step is this. Decide today on a percentage of your income to tithe. 1%, fine. Second step, make it automatic. Figure out a way to make that tithing, whoever you're giving the money to, automated. That way you'll do it. Step number three, share this idea with somebody you love. Seriously, the power of tithing is the power of community. If everyone that we knew was giving 1% of their income back to society, back to the community, we would live in a totally different world. Not just a world that's wealthy, but a world that's rich inside. And you know what? Again, the Automatic Millionaire Program, yes, it's been about money. Yes, it's been about automation. But you know deep down inside that it's been about more than that. One of the greatest reasons to achieve wealth is to help other people. And I hope inside you'll take this idea very seriously and you'll take it to heart. Wow, I can't believe it. These action steps, you're done. It's session 8. We just finished the last set of action steps. And that means we've come to the end of the program, which is, it's a little sad. I mean, I've had so much fun being here with you. I hope as this journey that you go through goes on, there'll be a chance for us to meet in the future. Here's what I want to do. Before we finish, I want to share with you a story. It's a personal story. And it's, again, it's about my grandmother. And it's a story I don't tell to a lot of people, but I want to share it with you because it really kind of ties all of this together. Unfortunately, a lot of people ask me, how is your Grandma Rosebach? My grandmother Rosebach passed away. She passed away back in 1997. Right before my first book, Smart Women Finish Rich, came out. But my grandmother Bach didn't pass away suddenly. She had a stroke. And my grandmother Bach, if you read my books and you could hear some of the stories I've told earlier, she really was my mentor. She was very much my first coach. And the week before she passed away, she had had a stroke, but I got to spend time with her in the hospital. As my grandmother was lying in the hospital bed sick, I didn't know she was going to pass away, but you could kind of, you know, there was a feeling in the air that this could be her deathbed. And I remember my grandmother pulling me aside, reaching to me, reaching on my sleeve, if you would, because she was struggling. She couldn't talk real well. You know, sometimes when you have a stroke, it's hard to communicate, but she was able to say the following to me. She said, David, in my life, I've had very few regrets. She said, you know, I've lived a great life, a totally full life. She said, I had a great marriage to your grandfather, Jack. I raised a wonderful son, your father, Marty. I got to be close to my grandchildren. She said, I lived a really full and meaningful life. She said, when your grandfather passed away, I could have given up, but I didn't. The last 17 years of my life, I've been down in Leisure World. I've made lots of new friends. But she said, if I have any regrets, it's this, and I want you to listen carefully. She said, in my life, I can count on one hand amount of opportunities that came my way where I really reached a fork in the road. She said, I was going down a path and I could see the fork. On the left side was a very safe approach to life. She said, I could go down that path and I could see the outcome and I knew how things would turn out. It wasn't guaranteed, but I could tell that if I went down that path, the chances are things would be pretty good. She said, on the right side of the road was more risk. I knew if I went down that road, I'd have to take a chance. But I could also see on the right side of the road, there was more opportunity. There was greater goal. But it was risky. And she said, a handful of times in my life that I can remember, like it was yesterday, I always went left. And she said, inside of me was a little girl saying, Rose, go right. Take the risk. But there was also a big girl inside of me saying, Rose, go left. Take the safe route. You can't afford to do something new. Go the safe way. And she says, in every case, that handful of times, I let the big girl take over for the little girl inside of me, and I went left. I went the safe route. And she says, I'll never know what would have happened if I had let that little girl inside of me come out to play and I had taken more risk. And so as she told me that story, she said, David, that big girl is inside each and every one of us. You've got a little boy inside of you that wants to come out and play, and you've got a big boy inside of you that's holding the little boy back. Let your little boy come out and play. She said, if I can give you one gift before I die, it would be this. Take more risk with your life. Then you'll never regret wondering what could be. And I get chills as I think about that, because we've all got that little girl or little boy inside of us that wants to come out and play. And we've got that big girl or big boy inside of us that holds us back. The person that got you to buy this program, The Automatic Millionaire, and got you to listen to this program day after day, that's your little boy or your little girl that wants you to come out and play. Now, as you go into life, let's face it, there are a lot of big girls and big boys out there, not just inside of us, but in our society. You've got parents that tell you why things won't work. You've got coworkers that tell you why things won't work. You might have a spouse telling you why things won't work. You've got all these big boy, big girl pressures trying to keep the little boy or little girl inside of you from coming out to play. Don't let it happen. This is your chance. This is your turn. I've given you some incredible tools that you can use. Take my grandmother's advice on her deathbed and let your little girl or little boy come out and play. And as you go on that journey we call life, and you let her out, or you let him out, and you go out and you play in the world, and you take some more risk, I want you to know that my thoughts and prayers are with you. And I hope as this journey through life continues, there'll be a chance where we get to meet face to face, where you come up to me at a seminar and you say, David, I went through your program, and here's what happened. I hope I get to meet you again. Send me an email, again, success@finishrich.com. Let me know how you do. God bless you. Enjoy your journey. Live and finish rich.
What do you really want out of life? It's a big question. In many ways, it's a very personal question. But when you get right down to it, as different as we all are, the things we're searching for in life are essentially the same. You want to be happy. You want to feel good. You want to enjoy the time you've been given. You want a job you really love. You want the relationships in your life to be healthy and enriching and wonderful. You want enough money so that you don't have to worry about money. You want to develop the skills to do something meaningful with your life, something that contributes to the world in a positive way and fulfills your sense of purpose. By listening to this program, you've discovered that information does exist to help you become skilled in one area of your life. Now you can get the information to become skilled in absolutely anything. Even your spirituality can be strengthened by developing the right skills. And skills, quite simply, are the secret to success. Ask anyone who has ever achieved their dreams. They'll tell you that skills are the key. Many people never learn these kinds of life skills because they're not taught in school. You have to go out and get them on your own. But where do you go? The fact that you're listening to this program now means you're already part of the way there. Why not go all the way? We are the Nightingale Conant Corporation, and for over 40 years, we have been the world's leading producer and publisher of powerful audio information for personal development. But we're much more than just a company. For tens of thousands of satisfied customers around the world, we're their partner in success, a one-stop source for ideas, information, and inspiration to create an extraordinary life. No matter what you want to accomplish in your life right now, we have a program that addresses your needs and interests. Whether you're looking to redesign your business, master powerful investing techniques, conquer procrastination, build a better vocabulary, enhance your conversational skills, or raise your consciousness spiritually. Our vast audio program library contains hundreds of titles covering every subject in the personal development spectrum. Our authors are world-renowned experts in their fields. And our information is delivered to you via the most powerful and convenient method available, audio. Audio learning is today's fastest growing media for training, education, and self-improvement. And the reason is simple. Audio programs give you the one thing you need more than anything else, time. Unlike books, classes, or even internet research, which force you to find or make time for learning, audio programs actually put more time into your life by turning the hundreds of hours a year you spend driving, commuting, or just lying around into valuable opportunities to build skills, master new ideas, and increase your knowledge. And because audio programs are able to deliver information on a powerful subconscious level, learning is almost effortless. The average person spends at least an hour a day in their car. That's at least 7 hours a week, or even more, 365 hours in a year. That's incredibly valuable time you could now spend learning, listening to a powerful Nightingale Conant program. You could literally turn your car into a university on wheels. However you happen to come to our family, you've received a great gift. Many people never discover this information, but somehow, for some reason, it did find you. Now, you can become the author of your own destiny by developing the skills that will help you create the life you want. And you can do it with the power of audio learning from the Nightingale Conant Corporation. Call us now today toll-free at 1-800-525-9000. That's 1-800-525-9000. And talk to one of our program consultants. They can help you find the perfect program for your current interests and needs. You can also visit us on the web at www.nightingale.com. That's www.nightingale.com. Happiness, satisfaction, a great family, good health, real career fulfillment, financial peace, a strong, focused life purpose. You know the things you want out of life, and you know how to get them. Take that next step. Call 1-800-525-9000 or visit us at www.nightingale.com.
Hi, I'm David Bach. All right, I want to welcome you to the bonus session. This is called Getting Your Financial House in Order. Now, I don't know when you'll be listening to me right now. You may have taken this out before you've even gone through the program. Maybe you're listening to this as you're going to the program, or maybe you're doing this last. Whatever the case may be, I want you to know why I'm giving you this tool. I'm giving you this tool for the following reason. Over the years as a financial advisor, what I learned from experience working with so many people is that most of us at home have a really messy, sloppy financial house. We don't have our finances all organized at home. We don't have nice file folders all color-coded and put in one file drawer where we can find all of our financial documents. For most people, what we've got is what I call the Nordstrom's shopping bag approach. We put all of our stuff in a Nordstrom shopping bag, or you're putting everything in one big file box. And at the end of the year, you got to try and find your documents. This leads to a lot of stress. So what I've done over the years is I developed a system. I call it the Finish Rich File Folder System. I originally developed this just to help my clients get organized at home so that when they were home and their statements came in the mail, they'd have a place to put everything that would make their life easy. So on a moment's notice, they could find any financial document they needed literally in a matter of 60 seconds. Now I want you to imagine, how great would that be if you had one file drawer in your house where everything in your life that's related to your finances could be found in 60 seconds. What's beautiful about this is it doesn't take a computer software program to do it. All you need is a file drawer and some file folders and a pen. All right? That's as much technology as you need. So now here's what I want you to do. You need to go get your workbook that was enclosed with the Automatic Millionaire program. And I want you to sit down and turn to the Finish Rich File Folder System. All right, so right now, turn me off. Go find the workbook if you don't have it in front of you. Bring it back, and then turn me back on, and we'll get started. All right, I want to welcome you back. You've got the Finish Rich File Folder System in front of you. There are 13 file folders I need you to create right now. Now, again, the Finish Rich File Folder System is completely self-explanatory, but I just want to go through a couple things here. Let's take a look at the first one, tax returns. People always ask me, how many years of tax returns should I keep? It depends on who you ask, but I recommend 7 years. Quite frankly, I would never throw out a tax return. Even though the IRS is realistically not coming back and auditing you 20 years later because legally they can't, they can always come back and audit you if they think there's a form of fraud. So I would keep all your tax returns. But in your Finish Rich File Folder System, I'm recommending that you keep 7 years of tax returns in that file folder. It's easy access, all right? File number two is the retirement accounts. Anything related to retirement, that goes in here. That includes 401k statements, IRA statements, bank IRA accounts, anything you can think of that's related to your retirement accounts, it's coming in the mail. All of your statements should go in here. File folder number three, Social Security. By now, you should have received your Social Security benefit statement. This is where you should be putting your benefit statements. If you haven't received one, you need to call Social Security and have them mail it to you. Make sure you check your Social Security benefit statements because you only have a limited amount of time that you can go back and fix a mistake. You should look at this every single year. All right, label number four, your investment accounts. Again, very self-explanatory. Anything related to investments goes in this file folder. Label number five, your checking accounts and your savings statements. Self-explanatory, this is where your bank accounts go. Again, put everything in here. Label number six, all household accounts. This includes your house title, your home improvements, house mortgage. Very important that you keep track of everything. Have a separate file folder for each category. So home improvements, anytime you're spending money in your home, this is where you'll put the receipts. This is very important because the cost basis of your home is increased based on how much money you spend fixing it up. When it comes time to sell your home, having all those receipts are very important from a tax standpoint. Label number seven is the credit card debt file folder. This is really important. I want you to have this say debt in capital letters. I would even consider getting a red file folder or using red ink. I don't care how many credit cards you've got. If you've got 30 credit cards, you want a file folder for each credit card so that you've got a separate file folder for each statement. This is a very important folder. If you have a lot of debt, you need to be watching this closely, paying attention to this, and obviously shrinking your debt by going through the session that we've done on debt reduction. Label number eight. File folder number eight is other liabilities. Anything that you can think of where you may owe somebody some money, that can go in this file folder. Number nine, insurance. File folder number 9, everything related to insurance. That can be your home insurance, your disability insurance, your car insurance, your jewelry insurance, your health insurance. Everything that's related to insurance goes in this file folder. Label number 10 is your family will or trust. Now, if you haven't done a family will or trust, you really need to, and I cover in detail in all of my books, Smart Women Finish Rich, Smart Couples Finish Rich, and the workbook, Why You Should Do a Will, How to Do a Will, or Whether or Not to Do a Trust. Put a folder in here anyway, even if it's empty, because it will remind you that you need to go and get a will done. Number 11, this is your children's accounts. If you don't have any children accounts, you can skip this one. If you have children accounts, then you should put everything pertaining to your children that you would want somebody else to know about if anything happened to you in this file folder. You can also put the investment accounts or college savings accounts in this file folder. Number 12 is the Finish Rich Inventory Planner. In the workbook, I've given you an entire form and system to organize your net worth. You can put everything down on paper, where all your money goes, what your net worth statement is, all there for you. You're going to find here the tool that I used with my clients to help them figure out their net worth, exactly how much they're worth. This is a very powerful form. You want to fill this out every year and update it. If you want, Xerox them out. That way you can use them over and over again. Use pencil. That way you can update it each year. If you want Xerox it out of the workbook, you've got my permission, then put that right in your file folder. Finally, the last file folder is where does all the money go? Now, you learn in this program, I'm not a big believer in budgeting, but you still want to know where all your money goes. So I've given you a form that you can use to fill out exactly where all the money goes. In your workbook, fill that form out. Again, if you want, Xerox it out, use pencil, put that in your file folder. Every year you should update that. All right, that's it. We're done. Congratulations. This is a great exercise to do also with your spouse or significant other. If you haven't done it with them, try and get them involved in the process. Congratulations. I don't know how long this took you. I've had some people tell me they were able to get it done in half an hour. I've also worked with clients where it's taken them all weekend to do this. So either way, whatever your situation was, I hope you feel better. I'm sure you do. I bet it's a weight off your shoulders. Excellent job. Pat yourself on the back. I'm proud of you.